Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumry. After Wrangell's deadly landslide in November, search and rescue teams worked around the clock for days, looking through debris for six missing people. Ultimately, five were found dead, and the last person has not been found. For searchers, it's exhausting and tireless work. There were, however, a few members of the team that raised morale, even if just a bit. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra spoke with Wrangell's search and rescue team to find out more.
Speak. Good boy.
That's Steve Prasunka giving commands to search and rescue dog Cody.
Oh, yeah, she'd get a biscuit for that, I think. There you go, Cody.
Cody is one of six specially trained dogs that are part of Wrangell Fire Department's Search and Rescue, or SAR, team.
These dogs are kind of part of the team. They're worker bees.
And a month ago, the dogs faced one of the harder jobs they've done. They took shifts, working in the aftermath of Wrangell's deadly November landslide. They looked for the six people who were missing.
This landslide was really exhausting for the dogs. There was just plowing through that mud, and that muck was pretty tough on them.
The dogs were joined by dog teammates from Sitka and Juneau. Prasunka says in this search, dogs were mostly used to find out if the human search and rescue workers were looking in the right spots. The landslide caused extensive damage, so the team was sorting through huge debris like piles of uprooted trees.
A crew of searchers would identify a spot that they felt was interesting, and a dog would be brought in to verify whether there was a target there or not.
In the end, the team found all the bodies except one. They searched for 12-year-old Derek Heller for 15 days before ending the search. Prasunka says working with dogs can save a lot of time, and he says it can really make a difference in how the work feels for the search team.
The dogs, when they verify what the searchers are doing, it buoys their spirits to keep pushing on, because otherwise you don't know if you're making any headway. So we kind of were, in some ways, cheerleaders to the heroic work of the ground searchers who just kept digging and digging and digging.
Wrangell Fire Chief Tim Bunis is responsible for leading the search and rescue team under the state troopers. He says the team being part of a 2,000-person small town made this search really tough.
For us, it was a very long, difficult search. You know, most of the searchers knew at least one or more of the family members that were lost that we were looking for. So it just kind of throws a different little wrench in it that the personal side of it that really makes it difficult.
But he says having dogs on the team made the search more efficient.
They're able to track by scent or by air. They're very useful in the search where we're in a smaller area like that to get us honed in on the area that we need to be working in.
And that efficiency can mean a lot. Dog handler Prasunka says having dogs embedded in a town search and rescue team means dogs can get out to search much earlier.
So if you're waiting for dogs to fly in from somewhere else, that can take a while, and the dog arrives and it's been flying and it's off its game a little bit, and the handler doesn't know the terrain like you know the terrain. And so to have embedded teams, I think, is absolutely crucial.
And in the urgency of a search and rescue, that difference in time could mean life or death for whoever is missing.
We're seeing more and more searches that involve elders, for example, who maybe have some type of cognitive impairment. And in the Alaskan climate, hours can make a difference.
Prasunka says when he works on search and rescue, he uses a technique his wife, a doctor, taught him to help him get through emotionally.
This is somebody else's tragedy and I'm a helper. And I'm not helpful if I make it my tragedy.
But he says he finds it hard to let go when the SAR team can't find someone.
We had a search once. I searched on my own for another 6 months, walking back roads looking for the person that was lost with my dogs. I have a hard time turning off. I don't like not finding who I'm looking for. And I know everybody on the team feels the same way. The whole SAR group feels the same way.
He says he doesn't know if he'll ever stop thinking about it all. But he says working with his dogs helps keep him present.
You can't be all depressed around your dogs. They need you to lead them, so.
Prasunka says he's trying to focus on the next training he and his dogs will do. Reporting in Wrangell.
With Colette Zarnicki.
I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Amid prolonged salmon crises in western Alaska, calls have grown for tribes to have a greater say in the way fisheries are managed. As KYUK's Evan Erickson reports, Many say the recent appointment of three Alaska Native members to the panel tasked with advising the top regional federal fisheries could be a step in the right direction.
A recent press release from the Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim Tribal Consortium, representing 98 tribes directly impacted by salmon crashes in western Alaska rivers, said it was encouraging to see more Alaska Native faces than ever before on the North Pacific Management Council's advisory panel. But it also called out the council for having a, quote, voting majority with an economic interest in the trawl fleet and a total lack of Alaska Native representation on the council itself.
It's so critical. It's something that we've been fighting for and asking for many years.
That's Eva Dawn Burke, who was recently appointed to a 3-year term on the advisory panel to its first ever designated Alaska Native seat.
Because I sit on at least 4 Alaska Native advisory councils for other projects or whatever. And it's like, yeah, I'm an advisor or whatever, but I don't have decision-making power.
Burke is Danae Athabaskan from Nanana and Manly Hot Springs and currently holds advisory positions with both the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and the Federal Subsistence Board. She has also spearheaded multiple educational projects in her region aimed at preserving traditional knowledge and ensuring food security.
It kind of was naturally like this is the next thing to kind of bring all those perspectives together.
The first appointee to the tribal seat now occupied by Burke was Shawan Jackson Gamble, who is Tlingit and Haida from Cake. He resigned the seat just months after being selected amid sexual assault charges stemming from a 2019 incident in Washington State. Not all of the current Alaska Native members of the advisory panel are fresh faces. Melissa Johnson has served on the panel since 2020 and was reappointed for a 3-year term in December. She is a Inupiaq and a member of the Nome Eskimo community and was passed over by Governor Mike Dunleavy for a voting seat on the 11-member council in 2023. The third Alaska Native appointee is newcomer Tiffany Andrew, assigned a 1-year term. She is a Yupik tribal member of the Lower Yukon River Village of Alakanuk and handles government affairs for the Yukon Delta Fisheries Development Association, a nonprofit corporation with a vested interest in the Bering Sea pollock fishery. This is thanks to a long-standing federal community development quota, or CDQ, program aimed at boosting the economic and social prospects of Western Alaska communities. The program allocates a percentage of the allowable commercial catch of various federally managed fisheries to nonprofit corporations like Andrew's. According to her resume, Andrew is a lifelong subsistence harvester, growing up fishing for salmon on a river that in recent years has been nearly completely closed to salmon fishing. But she also represents a CDQ group with proven results stimulating the region's economy, largely thanks to its stake in a pollock fishery accused of fueling the salmon crisis. She says that bringing together different points of view is critical.
There's too much subsistence needs not being met and CDQ issues going on as well that we all need to see from all perspectives.
For now, there is no guarantee that having more perspectives will translate into a greater voice for Alaska Natives in federal fisheries management, but achieving a greater voice on the advisory panel could ultimately prove a step in the right direction. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
Matt sued students and parents who sued the local school district in November over the removal of books from school library shelves are asking a federal court to order the books to be returned while the court case continues. The lawsuit stems from the Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District's removal of 56 books last spring at the school board's direction without any public review. Members of the public had raised concerns about the books to individual school board members, and the school district created a committee to review them. Northern Justice Project lawyer Savannah Fletcher is representing the plaintiffs, who filed a request for an injunction last week to have the books returned.
Libraries are a place of many diverse ideas, and just because some people disagree with them does not mean those books can be removed from everyone's access.
Matsu School District spokesperson Jillian Morrissey says the district has received the injunction request and, quote, will respond to the motion as required by applicable court rules. In a response last month to the initial lawsuit, the school district's lawyers wrote that the district denies the board permanently removed books or that it violated any student's constitutional rights. Much of the lawsuit hinges on a 1982 Supreme Court case from New York that concluded school districts could not restrict library books because they disagreed with the content. Fletcher noted similarities in the Matsu School District's actions.
I feel pretty confident that many of these books will go through the same end result and be returned to the bookshelves like they were over 40 years ago.
Fletcher says she expects an answer by mid-February from the court on the motion for the injunction to return the books. And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 25 degrees and cloudy. Tonight, We're supposed to have clear skies with a low of 20 degrees. Tomorrow, temperatures get a little bit colder, and so on, with a low Thursday night of 5 degrees. You're listening to KTOO.